Welcome to Respect Life Radio. My name is Deacon Jeff Bennett with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.
Today, our guest is Rachel Hoover Canto. She is a graduate of Christendom College, works as a tech writer and a freelance journalist for Catholic news outlets. While writing Pretty Good Catholic, her new book, she took her own advice and found the love of her life, and she and her husband now live in Nashville. And Rachel, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've been on before, and you had written a series of articles, which has led to this book called Pretty Good Catholic, How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares Your Faith. You talk about in the beginning of the book how you kind of, took your own advice. You spent 10 years of dating. So a lot of this is not only reaching out and interviewing and talking to people. You have the lived experience, don't you?
I do. And I would say 10 years might not sound like very long to some people out there who are still looking for their person, their spouse in their maybe 30s, 40s and beyond. But I'm very grateful that the journey is over for me. It ended very happily and glad that I could just share my experiences and everything I learned with others.
And, I saw the reviews on the book. You even have Michael Knowles wrote one. I mean, the reviews are very good. And it is nice to have kind of a guide, because sometimes we can think, we're crazy the way we're feeling, or we're not finding that person and we think it's only us. And when you read the book, you see just how common the difficulty is, sometimes finding that person you're going to spend the rest of your life with.
Yes. One really startling statistic that I found out about as I researched the book is that Catholic weddings per year have dramatically plummeted since about 1970. They've recovered a tiny bit since 2020. That year was kind of an outlier, but still we're seeing that they're down about 77% from what they were in 1970, which is actually percentage-wise a sharper decline than priestly vocations. And most people don't realize this. We hear a lot of talk about the vocation crisis, meaning priestly vocation crisis, and that's absolutely true, but we definitely have a crisis of the vocation to marriage as well. Just Catholic couples and families are not being formed the way they used to be. And this is a serious problem for all the vocations and for the whole church in the next generation.
Yeah, and so is part of that just, the way Catholics have assimilated into society and kind of unfortunately embraced societal values, on top of just it's harder in a world that, people spend online and not really meeting people. Is it a combination of those factors?
Absolutely. There's definitely the just general trend of getting secularized, and plenty of people who might call themselves Catholic, not really practicing their faith. Maybe they don't prioritize marriage as a sacrament in the way that we should. And so there's definitely the trend of just marrying outside the church or not marrying at all. But what I found is that it's not quite that simple. That's definitely a big piece of the decline. But then there are plenty of people left who are faithful Catholics looking for another faithful Catholic to marry and still really struggling with finding the right person. It's just hard to meet fellow single Catholics. Once you meet them, it's hard to know what to do next. Guys are wondering, should I just ask her out right away, or should we be friends first, or how do I send the right signals here? And then if you start dating someone, there are all kinds of other obstacles that can get in the way. A lot of young people struggle with discerning whether they're called to marriage at all. Should they actually be pursuing priesthood or religious life? And they can go back and forth multiple times. So there are just countless different obstacles kind of all layered on top of each other. You mentioned online dating. That can be such a good tool when it's done well, but it can also be such a hindrance, I think, that we spend so much time on the internet. So that's a new way to meet people far away and outside your own parish and your own city, but it's also a way to kind of hide behind your screen and never really learn how to interact with someone in real life, which if you're going to ultimately get married, you have to interact in real life at some point. So it's a very complicated situation, and I tried to address all the different obstacles I was hearing about and then provide at least a starting point, some tips for starting to overcome each one.
Well, and I think in the beginning of the book, you know, where you talk about just meeting people, right? Sometimes we can get too picky. We have to find that perfect person. You know, we don't really get to know a person unless we spend time with them anyway. So to make such a snap judgment, unless something is, very obvious, you know, you got to fish in a bigger pond, and who knows where that leads. But if you narrow yourself in an already difficult situation, you're really putting yourself behind the eight ball, aren't you?
Absolutely. I really encourage people to start with just meeting whoever crosses your path and being open to whatever God brings out of that. Maybe you don't end up dating or marrying someone, but you just have a pleasant conversation when you're out and about, and that's fine too. And even if you go on a few dates with someone, that doesn't mean that you've done something wrong if you decide not to pursue the relationship further. Sometimes young people have heard to take dating seriously, that you should date with intention and date for marriage. And that's all true, but they've heard that so much that they kind of blow it out of proportion and think, I can't even ask someone out or say yes to a date unless I already really, really think that we're probably going to get married. And that's just too much pressure to put on those first few interactions. I suggest more of an approach of easing into it just naturally, the way you would with a friendship or anything else. Just start to get to know someone a little bit and then a little bit more, and keep taking one more step until there's a reason not to.
But I think this book helps, because sometimes the longer we go wanting something, no matter what it is, right, the longer it goes, the more pressure we put on ourselves, and it becomes more of a science than, you know, just a way we live our life. And I think this book kind of helps put things in perspective for people who are struggling, or, you know, parents who have kids who are struggling. You know, it's a great resource, but put that extra pressure on yourself only makes a bad situation worse. And this is what this book, I think, and I'm sure part of your intent was, hey, relax and just don't overanalyze, just kind of let life take its point, but have some, you know, some guiding principles as you go through this.
Exactly. I want people to relax enough to kind of remove their filters in the beginning and be willing to just meet anyone who comes along and just get to know somebody a little bit. There's really no danger in that, nothing immoral about it. But then, of course, have some standards so that as they get deeper into a relationship with someone, they're only considering actually marrying someone who is a good, virtuous person who hopefully shares the faith, or at least can align on certain really important values. And, you know, I'm not at all saying that Catholics should just give up on finding a good Catholic spouse and just, you know, marry whoever. But in order to find that person who really is a faithful Catholic, who really is virtuous, like you said earlier, Deacon, we have to spend some time with them. We have to see what they're like in real life. And so if we're not willing to just spend time with someone for a little while first, it's putting the cart before the horse a little bit to say, well, I only want to meet people who are really good, faithful Catholics who might make a good spouse. But you don't know where those people are until you just go out there and meet whoever. So I think relaxing and yet also having those standards to kind of bring into play as the relationship proceeds, and make sure that we're not, marrying somebody who's really a bad fit, but still having that spirit of openness and just charity. I see it as a part of charity to just encounter the people that God puts in your path, whether it's at work or at church or in the grocery store, wherever you go. And maybe nothing comes of it. Maybe some kind of evangelization comes of it. Maybe you've just treated someone with respect and kindness rather than shutting them down immediately. Those are all good things. It's good manners in a way that I think can also lead to maybe going on a date with someone, maybe ending up in a relationship, maybe finding a spouse who is a good Catholic in a place that you didn't expect initially.
Well, and I think you kind of mentioned in the book, right, you want somebody who's faithful, but not, can't have fun. And sometimes I hear, and I've heard it from both sides, well, I find somebody who's faithful, but then they're kind of weird, or they don't know how to live life, right? Mm-hmm. They're afraid of their own shadow. And sometimes it's hard to find, and then you find somebody who's free willing, but has no faith. So it can be hard to find both and not just one or the other.
Yes, definitely. I heard that so many times. I heard from one young man in particular who said, all the Catholic girls he was running into, trying to date them was really depressing because, as he put it, everything is almost a sin. And that was so sad to hear, because that's not the way real Christian joy is supposed to be lived out, right? We're not supposed to be living in scrupulosity all the time. And then I heard it from the other way, too, a lot of women saying men are either faithful and committed to chastity and willing to respect me, or they're fun and interesting to talk to and have hobbies, but it's very hard to find both. And I think those people who have both do exist, but certainly they seem to have become more rare. And I'm not quite sure why that is, but definitely as Catholics, there's nothing in the Catechism or the Bible that says we can't have fun and have hobbies. And I really recommend that people build a really well-rounded life as a starting point for not just having a better dating life, although it really helps with that, but just being a better person, really. We all need some kind of exercise, for example. We all need some kind of interest or hobby outside of work. And we can all do things that are fun and wholesome that aren't just, you know, going to the young adult Bible study, although that's a good thing to do too. So I think young people should learn how to dance. I think they should. That's a really great way to meet new people and do something fun and engaging at the same time. If that's not your thing, playing sports is a really good idea. Here in Nashville, we have a lot of pickup sports among Catholic groups that are a lot of fun, and a lot of people come and meet each other that way. So there are plenty of options beyond just going to Mass and hoping you run into someone there. And sometimes it sparks a better conversation to meet people through some shared activity. And then you kind of have a built-in shared interest that can lead to dates in the future and just give you something else to talk about, you know?
Yeah, and you know, we touched on it briefly in the beginning, talking about online dating. And you put five principles that I thought were very helpful, because we can get too comfortable doing everything online. We never meet the person. And your very first principle is meet the person as soon as possible, right? This person just can't be somebody that, you know, we've seen a picture of or even a video of. We're going to know somebody, we have to meet them. And the sooner you do that, the better off you are, aren't you?
Absolutely. I give some examples there of the different reasons why that's so important. There's sort of the obvious one of, somebody could just be hiding their true identity and catfishing you, as they say, and you need to meet in person to really know that they are who they say they are. But also beyond that, we're incarnational beings. We're fleshly, and we need that physical presence to fully communicate with each other. I don't think you ever fully know someone until you're in the same room with them. And I heard that confirmed by couples and others that I spoke to, that just seeing all that unspoken communication, the way someone moves, the way someone treats others around you too. If you don't meet in person and go out and have experiences together, then you don't see, how does he treat the waitress at the restaurant, or how does he treat his mother? You know, how does she behave when she's frustrated by traffic or something? You don't get all of that when you're just talking through texting or even video calls. And so it should just be common sense, but I think doing all of that as soon as you possibly can, if distance is prohibitive, then, you know, video calls, I think, are sort of a second best. But really, I don't think you should say you're in a serious relationship with someone unless you're spending time with them in real life on a pretty regular basis, because that's how the rest of your life is going to be if this does turn into a marriage.
Yeah, I mean, it is common sense. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I think what this book helps you do is kind of break out of your comfort zone. Because sometimes we just get, no matter where we are, whether it's online or we're only looking, you know, at church or wherever, it's because that we tend to do what we're more comfortable with. And we're really never going to do what the Lord wants of us if we stay in our comfort zone. And that, I think, applies also to meeting people, even if we don't marry them. We miss meeting interesting people and friends and other things by being neglectful of breaking out of that comfort zone.
That's a really good point. Yeah, we're never well, one way to put it is the comfort zone is full of people that you already know and you aren't marrying them. And so there's some reason for that. And it's time to expand beyond. And so much of the problems I think that people run into in dating can be traced back to that. We just get comfortable with our routine, the places we normally go, the activities we normally do. The younger generations are definitely very, very comfortable with doing everything on a phone or through a screen. And that can be so convenient, but ultimately this means it's so noticeable and so meaningful when someone does step out of that comfort zone and do something that maybe used to be normal, but is now very unusual and intentional. For example, if a young man just asks a woman out in public, that's in person rather than by texting her or something, that's a really big deal now. And it's going to really stand out to her. She's going to really notice that. So everyone does need to get past their comfort zone. And I think also, because the comfort zone tends to be so, so small now, it doesn't take very much to break out of it sometimes and just show a little bit of courage that can spark a connection with another person and make a really good impression.
Well, I guess, you know, as someone who's older and been married, you know, almost 35 years, it almost seems embarrassing that people are, you know, have to be encouraged just to do something in person. Like, we had to go to people's houses to pick them up and meet their dads, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We had to do things that, you know, if you didn't have to, you probably wouldn't have. But, you know, it made the effort apparent to the people. If you're going to go meet dad and get scrutinized and all those other things, now it's almost so easy, yet it's that much harder, it seems, because we take the easy path and, you know, we don't, and a lot of people don't have the interpersonal skills, like looking somebody in the eye, not pulling your phone out when you're on a meal, you know, things that seem obvious, people really struggle with, don't they?
They do. And sometimes it's just because we haven't really been taught or told what the right thing is to do. I remember a professor of mine in college pointed out that technology advanced so much faster than humans are capable of advancing our etiquette and our culture. So for a while, when cell phones first came out, it was very hard to know what to do. Do you answer it when you're already with someone else, or do you ignore it? And we've had to sort of catch up to our own technology in those other ways. And I think sometimes it's very simple. We just have to tell people, you know, I don't really like it when you pull out your phone when we're on a date, because that makes me feel like I'm being ignored. Can we just spend this time with each other? You know, and maybe that's all it takes. But that's part of the mission of this book, really, is to try to put a lot of those types of tips and tricks, you know, how do you politely ask someone out? How do you politely say yes or no to a date? What should you do in this or that situation? And just kind of pull them together. I spoke with a professional matchmaker for a lot of the points early in the book, and she has such a good wealth of wisdom. Her name is Christina Pineda. She's a co-founder of Matchmakers in the City. And they do date coaching with all their clients. They hear feedback from their clients on what came across as rude or annoying. And so they're able to kind of provide a lot of wisdom there. And sometimes it's just as simple as telling someone, because they've never realized that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this. I didn't realize how it makes the other person feel. So I think we're in a time when the manners just didn't get passed down because the situation is so different from one generation to the next. And we have a chance to kind of rebuild etiquette and kind of those basic interpersonal skills in the next generation now.
But I think, to your point, and even in your book, it does you know, this book is for people who are dating, but if you're a parent, right, you have an obligation to teach them manners and respect and the dignity of the person. So, you know, if we send our kids out into the world and we, you know, we didn't bother to, or, you know, we couldn't spend the time teaching them, kind of shame on us. And I think that does reflect on parenting when you read this book and just how hard it is to meet people, because we're sending neophytes out into the world and expecting them to be able to function. And unfortunately, sometimes they can't.
Right. I think there was at least from what I can tell, this sense among maybe our parents and grandparents generations that it's just such a normal thing to grow up and start dating and meeting people, and then you just get married. And that was just the way life went. It was so easy for a lot of people in the past. And now I'm realizing more and more, it doesn't just happen naturally and automatically anymore. It takes a lot more effort. And so I think what parents now can do, if they have older teens or young adults, children, I think they and leaders in the church as well can start to provide kind of more structures or more paths for people to meet each other and learn those behaviors that kind of lead to the smooth beginning of a relationship. It's something that it doesn't just get learned by osmosis anymore. It has to be taught very explicitly. So I love to hear about parishes and dioceses that are putting together dances specifically for young adults or teens to kind of bring all the Catholic teens, young adults together so that they have a chance to meet each other, and teaching them things like how to dance and how to ask someone to dance, which is a really good starting point for kind of that male to female language, and other things too. I mean, there's all kinds of good wholesome activities that can be a starting point here. But I think just saying explicitly, you know, marriage is really good. Marriage is a vocation that you should really be considering, not to the exclusion of priesthood or religious life, of course, but a lot of people are going to be called to marriage, and it's something to start thinking about when you're young and learning how to just interact with the opposite sex from a younger age is a really good idea. I think sometimes there was so much fear for a while that teens and young adults would do the wrong things with the opposite sex, but we kind of forgot to teach them how to do the right things. There was so much, don't do this, don't do that, and not enough, here's what you should do instead. And so I think now is the time to start rebuilding that, here's what you should do, and just explicitly pointing to the right path to get from single into your vocation, especially into that vocation of marriage.
Well, I'm going to interject my own thought and that, hey, open the car door for her, pay for the meal. Mm-hmm. Don't make, you know, none of this, you know, make her pay, or you go Dutch or whatever, you know, act like a gentleman. But you talk about, you know, what a first date kind of looks like, right? The length of time, don't make it too expensive. I mean, it is, you know, you would hope it'd be common sense, but I think these are good guidelines. But be a gentleman, for crying out loud. And if you don't know what that is, look it up, because, you know, no one wants to go out with somebody who, you know, oh, I forgot my wallet. You know, it's raining and I jump in the car first. I mean, just stupid stuff that I see all the time. Even with married couples, it drives me up the wall. And I think you do a good job of kind of laying this out. And I think, you know, just again, spelling out what a first date kind of parameters look like should really put people, you know, in a more of a better comfort zone.
I think so. I think, well, basically the guidelines that I give are, I'm pulling these from other experts as well as my own experience, but it really shouldn't be more than a couple of hours. Definitely you should not be drinking excessive amounts of alcohol, if any. You know, it doesn't need to be really expensive. It can be very simple. And I give some different ideas based on whether you're maybe a teenager or a student, you know, versus someone who's maybe in a position to do dinner for a first date. That's fine. But it doesn't have to be fancy and expensive so much as just intentional. I think a date is supposed to be just intentionally spending time with this other person to get to know him or her a little better. And a man can do a lot with that. Just he can really make a good impression on a woman just by showing that he has a plan and putting together something lovely, even if it's just a little picnic in the park or something that didn't cost a lot. So I think men should kind of embrace the challenge of thinking, how can I make this a little nicer, even if it doesn't involve spending a lot more money or anything like that? And just seeing if they can impress a girl a little bit. That's kind of the idea, not to go over the top and put too much pressure on yourself, but just to make it fun and make it memorable.
Well, because you'd kind of like to have a second one if you think you're compatible. And if you act like a knucklehead, you're never getting number two. So I think that is right. Good advice. you know, if a single's reading, you know, if a single's struggling, why should they pick up this book? And we've gotten to the last couple minutes. So I just, you know, what do you hope they get from reading this book?
I hope that anyone who's single right now who picks up Pretty Good Catholic would, first of all, just be reassured that they're not alone. It doesn't necessarily mean something's majorly wrong with you or that you have to make some drastic life change like moving across the country or anything like that in order to find your spouse. It also doesn't mean that God is somehow withholding marriage from you on purpose. You know, he works with our choices in so many ways, and he works with other people's choices. So I want people to, first of all, just be reassured that this is something that is kind of universally happening right now. It's not something unique to you. You're not alone. And that should give hope, because it means there's somebody else out there of the opposite sex who's thinking the exact same thing and dealing with the same problem and looking for you. And so that's number one. And then number two would be, I hope everyone just gets the next step out of this book. If you've already been meeting a lot of people, but just not getting to that first date, then I hope they find some tips to take those acquaintances or friendships to the dating level. If you're already dating, but you never seem to get past a certain point in the relationship, there are tips for further down the line, how to discern marriage more explicitly, even tips for the engagement stage. That can be a really difficult time. But for my husband and me, at least, it was a wonderful time. It was very fruitful because we were able to really deepen our relationship. So there are tips for kind of the next step of the relationship at every stage, from I'm not even meeting new people on a regular basis at all the way to I'm thinking about marrying this person and I'm just not quite sure if it's the right decision and everything in between. So I hope that it has some practical tips for people at every stage of that journey.
Respect Life Radio is produced by Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.